Over the weekend, thousands of people across the United States witnessed a rare phenomenon, the Aurora Borealis, which was sighted from California to Florida due to turbulent space weather caused by solar flares. These flares supercharged the particles that create the Northern Lights. For more, we spoke with two experts from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Geophysical Institution, Sean Dahl.
And I am the Space Weather Prediction Center Service Coordinator, and I'm also a Senior Space Weather Forecaster here.
And Mark Conde.
Professor of Physics at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and I study space weather.
Both Dahl and Conde specialize in the study of space weather and explain what space weather entails.
In general terms, it's what's taking place on the sun and in that large vacuum of space between the sun and the Earth, and ultimately, as we most people now learned if they didn't know before, at and around our planet at some point.
You know, the sun goes through quite periods of eruptive activity, particularly at what's called solar maximum, which we're coming up to now. The sun goes through an 11-year cycle of being quiet for a few years and then becoming active for a few years. When the sun is active, like it is now, we get these eruptions that occur on the sun that emit X-rays and ultraviolet light, and they also eject material from the sun, which then flows out through the solar system. And when that material reaches Earth, it disturbs the geospace environment, and ultimately that disturbance comes down and impacts the upper atmosphere of the Earth.
When geomagnetic activity is low, you can typically see the Aurora Borealis near the Arctic Circle. However, this weekend saw a G5 geomagnetic storm, which is the highest level on their scale.
The G5 refers to our NOAA space weather scale. It's kind of like the hurricane scale. It's designed to be a 1 through 5. So there's levels of importance below the 1, but then once you meet a certain category, now it warrants that scale, just like a hurricane compared to lower level but still severe winds. So we have three types of scales. This one's dealing with geomagnetic storms, which is the G scale you just mentioned. And that is referring to essentially a magnetic storm as a result of energized particles and strong magnetic fields that have left the sun and reached Earth. In this case, it reached extreme levels, the G5, the top end of our scale, which we have not seen since the year 2003.
The process that causes the aurora is, you know, one part of a whole system of charged particle and plasma moving around, and one of the consequences of that is that it produces electric currents in Earth's magnetosphere and ionosphere. And those electric currents cause magnetic disturbances. So if you measure the magnetic field on the ground, you'll see it during a magnetic storm, you'll see that it's different to its sort of quiet average time level. And so for a couple of hundred years, people have used these measurements of disruptions in the magnetic field to indicate that something's happening in terms of space weather. And they use the amount of disturbance in the magnetic field as a way of quantifying how disturbed things are. So there are what are called magnetic indices. A number of observatories around the world calculate how disturbed the magnetic field is in their location, and those numbers are sort of averaged together and combined to produce an overall index for what's happening across the whole planet. And that index is used to generate this G scale that ranges from, you know, 0 to 5 for the amount of disturbance that's going on, and the 5 is the highest level of disturbance that particular scale recognizes. And, you know, a G5 event is a once in 10 or 20 year occurrence. But that classification means that the amount of disturbance in the magnetic field across a number of locations on Earth was very large compared to the sort of levels of disturbance we see during smaller events.
NOAA's Space Weather Prediction Center maintains an aurora dashboard with information on space weather and charts the aurora's visibility.
And in this case, what we saw was a very active storm region on the sun. Without getting all the gory details, we started wondering if this thing was going to send out into space one of these things that we call a coronal mass ejection, or CME for short, which is these energized particles and magnetic fields I was talking about a moment ago. We tried to time it. We knew it was going to hit Earth. That was quite obvious based off our initial analysis. And that was a matter of trying to figure out timing and intensity. And in our mind, we warranted enough confidence that we put out a G4 watch. We don't do a G5 watch. We top it off at G4. And that was the first time we've issued that level of watch since the year 2005. So it's a very rare event. And when it reached here, it was no surprise. It arrived with enough force to ratchet us up quickly and immediately to G4 levels and then eventually even into G5. And this lasted throughout the night globally. So people all around the world got to see the aurora, such as yourself over there in California along the horizon at the very least. In many cases, they don't normally get to see it. And that's just because of the power of the event. The stronger those are, the more these particles can get into our atmosphere and extend further south because of all the dynamics that go on with our protective magnetic barrier resulting with that of the sun.
The aurora is caused by charged particles, primarily electrons, but also protons and light nuclei, but primarily electrons, impacting the upper atmosphere of the Earth, a bit like the electron gun in an old cathode ray TV screen. When the electrons hit the phosphor, it causes a glow. Similarly, here on Earth, when the charged particles that are caught up in this geospace environment, the magnetic bubble around Earth, they sort of get funneled down to Earth's atmosphere. And if you imagine the sort of geometry of a bar magnet, the magnetic field lines coming out of a bar magnet sort of emerge near the poles, and the particles in space are sort of restricted to traveling along the magnetic field lines, which sort of guides them to the polar regions, where they ultimately end up hitting the Earth's atmosphere, and when they do, they produce a glow. Now, normally that process guides them to the high latitudes, you know, around Alaska where we are, and so we would see aurora, you know, even under relatively quiet conditions, you can see aurora in Alaska. But if the magnetic field is particularly disturbed and the particle fluxes are great, that region where the particles are striking the atmosphere can sort of expand away from the poles towards more mid-latitudes, and that's what happened over the weekend.
The aurora borealis sometimes appears pink due to the presence of nitrogen molecules at lower altitudes. When these nitrogen molecules are energized by solar particles, they emit a pink or sometimes red light. This beautiful variation to the more common green auroras, which are created by oxygen, was especially visible during the G5 geomagnetic storm. This event supercharged the atmospheric particles, allowing the spectacle to be witnessed further south than normal.
To make it as simple as possible, basically these energized particles, when they flow into our outer atmosphere, what we call the ionosphere out there, they interact with Earth's own molecules that exist up there in different gases and different forms. And when they do this interaction, as things settle down and go back to normal state that they were in, it emits light because they were so excited to the state where they were able to do this. And then it starts over again. This happens continually as long as we're getting pounded by these energized particles and connected with the sun's magnetic field as we were. And the stronger that event, we got to extreme here, the more that interaction can go towards lower magnetic latitudes, which is somewhat different than the geographic latitudes we're used to talking about. And that allowed people to see the aurora as far south as in northern Alabama. And I even heard reports similar to yours from Florida, all the way over to close to southern California.
In 2003, a similar geomagnetic storm disrupted communications and caused blackouts and damages in Europe and South Africa. So we asked if damages occurred during the latest storm.
There have been effects reported and some impacts. We're not ready to release a statement about those. I don't know what form we're going to do that, but in general terms, there were GPS issues. The farmers are trying to plant right now in the Great Plains section of our country. And they rely on precision agriculture with GPS. On Friday, they could not operate a lot of those systems, especially any older ones. They just were not working. And then they also have huge positional errors, which cost a lot of money. You're not getting the seeds where they're supposed to be. So they had to suspend operations. It was really quite remarkable. Aviation was experiencing some communication loss over the Pacific Ocean there, as an example close to you. So they'd have to deviate their flight route. They have to have certain types of communication. Even backups have to be available. And in this case, the aurora, for the most part, was the cause of that not being allowed to happen. So it'd have to deviate further south, spend more time and money, and a longer flight path, whether they were going across the Atlantic or the Pacific. And finally, the power grid. That's somebody we interact directly with as well. They were well prepared for this over years of experience and training and education on this topic. And they were experiencing voltage irregularities throughout areas of the grid, And what that means is they were noticing the currents that were induced from geomagnetic storms that happen that they don't want on their high-voltage transmission lines. It's bringing direct current into an alternating current system, and that can wreak havoc at high levels. They were getting strong levels at the very least, so they were working hard to mitigate the problem throughout the storm, and I'm unaware of any blackouts that could have happened if they weren't prepared for this. But thanks to space weather being space weather ready, they were ready to go, and we were informing them, and they were able to mitigate the problem.
According to NOAA's Space Weather Prediction Center, radio blackouts are expected to be a risk through May 15th as the solar radiation storm winds down. But Condi, with the Geophysical Institute in Alaska, says this may not be our last chance to see the northern lights in Northern California.
The current event is waning now, and it's always risky to predict the future, but the current outlook is probably that, you know, there may be some small recurrences, but the event is waning now. But the sun is approaching its most active period in this 12-year cycle, so for the next year or two, there's a reasonable chance that we will see, you know, events maybe not quite as big as this one, or maybe bigger, you know, but we're in that period where events like this are most likely to occur. So this was a rather large and unusual event. The chances that we'll get another one are maybe not as high as you'd like, but there is a good chance, nevertheless, that in the next couple of years, people in the lower 48 of the US would have multiple opportunities to see the aurora because the sun is coming up to its most active time.
KMA News posted a photo of the aurora borealis on our social media pages. You can share your photos on our thread by searching for KMA News on Facebook.